Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida, and excuse his voice, he caught a bit of a cold last Thursday, and he's still fighting it off. So, Rick, thank you so much for being on the show. And let's just get into it. People are still calling it the summer doldrum of trades. Very low volumes. Can we really get much of an indication of where the markets intend to go when such a low volume of shares is trading?
Well, let me mention first, I've got COVID, but just really feeble symptoms of it. It's just this comical laryngitis that sounds about 100 times worse than I feel. I'm fine. But I'll try to croak it out today. Concerning your question, Jim, that's how this bear market works, low volume. It's a hoax every step of the way until it gets high. The hoax goes high enough that people start believing it and it becomes a real rally. And it's particularly true for the bellwether of all bellwethers. You know, all the chimpanzees have made an easy living from Apple. It was a stock they bought in 2009. They haven't sold a share, and it sort of, it just butters their bread. They don't have to think about it, and they certainly don't sell it, and they just buy more of it when they deliberately crash the stock or, you know, they take it down. So what happens is, you know, when you have a stock with a huge capitalization like Apple, it takes literally hundreds of billions of dollars to move it through previous peaks and supply zones. But the whole thing is being done criminally, I would say, although, you know, the rules make it perfectly legal. These are smart guys. I would say 90% of the upward movement in Apple has taken place into almost zero supply overnight. And when they've exhausted the short squeeze, just to double down, they pull the bids and they let it drop into the opening bell. And what happens is they pull the bids and they let Apple drop until sellers are absolutely depleted. There are no more. So when the opening bell rings, you know, all the shorts are looking to get them back in, and they find no supply, and that gaps the stock up in the morning. So I would say, yeah, at least 90% of the movement of this gigantic stock has taken place with the expenditure of almost $0, you know, relatively small change into zero supply. And that same effect has been visible throughout the markets, although you can see that the FANG stocks are kind of languishing down nearer their lows than their highs. So I'm going to be curious myself to see how they sustain loft in Apple with the market tugging the other way. Because Apple can't vamp in the upper atmosphere there forever. It's going to have to come down some.
In this kind of atmosphere, is there any place that you think people should be putting money right now, or should you be quite cautious? Because so many people are saying that the end of the month or September is going to be deadly on the stock markets.
No, it won't, especially if everybody says it.
Yeah.
And if I take another vacation, you can bet the market's going to go absolutely bonkers while I'm away. But, you know, as far as where the money should be, something we've talked about for the last couple of years, but it's as timely as ever right now. And that's just, you got to buy what everyone hates. That means gold and treasury paper long term. And we've talked about that barbell strategy. It's opportune now. The 3.56 target that I put out on a 10-year a long time ago, it was a perfect spot to do the bond side of the barbell, because that high forecast, which I think I was practically alone in thinking that would be it for interest rates, if there's going to be a rise in rates, it would happen in a real way with inflation sinking and rates staying more or less the same. So I was practically alone, not only in predicting that interest rates, the rise had it, but I got the target almost exactly right. So it was a great time to, as I said, to do the bond side of the barbell hedge. And gold is so wildly despised that it has to be a buy too, because you know the old rule, no one ever went broke buying what everyone hates.
It's interesting. For gold miners, are they a buy now, or are they still a disaster area?
No, they're going to lag, but they're going to certainly pick up a little bit of boost with oil prices falling. And again, I call it a pretty good top there against the consensus. You know, I've got guys talking about $200 a barrel oil. And from a technical standpoint, that's nowhere on the charts. I think we're coming down to the mid-70s, and you can see it's finally giving relief at the pump. But I think that before this inflation that I've been writing about for 30 years actually comes a roaring in a catastrophic way, we have another leg up in CPI inflation. A lot of it will come from hugely higher grocery prices when all the food we're getting, especially produce, starts reflecting the exorbitant price of fertilizer these days.
And we have, and talking about food prices, Europe in an extensive drought, the Rhine River just a trickle, major rivers in France down to puddles all over the place with cargo barges stranded on sandbars everywhere. How's that going to affect the world economy when places like Germany can't get their industrial products in or raw materials in to make those products?
That was the scariest story I've read in the last few months in the Wall Street Journal. You know, the way the major river arteries that are used for transport, the Rhone, the Danube, some of the French rivers, they're all drying up, and yeah, it's making shipping a real challenge. And the shippers were trying to put these barge operators were trying to put a good spin on it. They don't like to see complete disaster. And they said it's manageable, but with greatly reduced barge traffic. So, you know, this is, Germany, I could never quite comprehend it. You know, they try to do everything the honest way. Even when they integrated Eastern Europe, they redeemed Ostmarks as though they were D-marks. That was a tremendous hit, but the German savings pool goes pretty deep. So, you know, they're shutting down all nuclear capacity with a hugely expensive effect, you know, when you're just generating wind power. And now we're discovering that these windmills don't last forever, and at merely dismantling them, the whole operating cycle from construction to scrapping is a very expensive way to produce power. And yet the Germans now are going full tilt into coal because it's all they've got. And they're threatened, of course, with the eclipse this winter if Russia cuts off gas supplies. So the Germans sort of take on every challenge by the horns. And I just think they've bitten off too much. And of course, being the economic engine of Europe, that's going to be a very important thing.
The Germans in the Second World War made gasoline out of coal, but that was a very expensive process back then. I can't imagine what it would cost today.
Right, right. They did everything the hard way, but I guess the right way. Even, you know, the construction, the design and construction of the Luger, they could have gotten more bang for their buck with, let's say, a less capable pistol.
Well, of course, yeah, the Germans notorious for over-engineering, and the fact that several models of a Porsche to change the oil filter, you have to pull the entire engine out instead of putting it at the top of the engine rear, a flick of the wrist and it's done. We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. How's the U.S. dollar doing?
It's in a correction, but I've been saying for years and years, also extremely against the grain when everybody was blathering about inflation. You know, I was asking the question, what inflation? You know, how far can inflation go with the dollar continuing to rise? So the dollar had an enormous rise. The dollar index, though, more recently, let me give you the exact numbers here. The dollar index topped out in, mid-July at around 112 or so. It sold off to 104, what I would call good, healthy correction, and it's now looking like it's bound for 110.27, but that's predicated on getting through what I call a midpoint resistance at 107.46. But my ultimate target that I've talked about for years, always against a heavy consensus, was 120. And the CPI lovers and blatherers and obsessors are going to have trouble with this whole inflation obsession with the dollar index up at 120. And I would add that the multinationals are going to have trouble making any money on exports.
Crude oil, as you mentioned, going down, but this fall, this winter, with the threat of Russia turning off the taps, is it going to go absolutely crazy again? And we can expect to be paying, well, in Vancouver, we hit $2.50 a liter or $10 a gallon.
No, anything but crazy. It'll be headed slowly down to $30 or $40 a barrel. However, there's a definite wild card there, and that's our senile idiot president, because he's capable of doing something that would create the geopolitical crisis that can make about $200 a barrel, but Biden's capable of screwing up in some way that spikes oil in some remarkable way.
Well, we had Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, going to Taiwan against the advice of international experts, poking, I guess it's the Chinese panda in the eye. And pandas look nice, but they have very sharp teeth.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Pelosi didn't get shot down. And I have to say, in retrospect, the trip wasn't as bad as it was made out to be. I mean, you gotta hate her for a thousand reasons, but that's not my number one reason. It showed that, China is, I wouldn't call it quite a Piper Tiger, the way they're building, fleet to dominate the Pacific. But, I think that I've decided that what China has observed in Ukraine is going to make it less tempted to go after Taiwan. I think that's probably not going to happen. Originally, I thought it was a done deal, but Putin is really struggling. He has no major tactical accomplishments in Ukraine to show for. And I think, something like they've lost 27 generals, which is a huge amount of brass there in the effort so far. So Putin doesn't even have a path right now to achieve what you would have considered his strategic objectives there, which was to do away with Ukraine entirely and consolidate it with Mother Russia. So, and the generals couldn't have been killed unless the U.S. had significant presence there, and they have. You know, they've been basically training and operating with the Ukraine government since 2014, and it looks like by the time Putin moved in a big way, U.S. intelligence was expert enough, sufficiently developed, that they knew just where to shoot to kill the generals, and also to tie Putin in knots. And the thing is, as long as it's Ukraine that's doing all the shooting, the Russians really can't come back at the U.S. and make direct war against us. They have to continue to prosecute their war against Ukraine. So I don't know. You know, the U.S. strategy in Ukraine has not been entirely wrong-headed, as some articles seem to have it.
Rick, I hope you have a quick recovery there on the voice. And overall, you're still feeling okay.
Yeah, I've got joke COVID, really. For what it's worth, I did get the jab. Convinced that all these people bragging about how many boosters they have are either going to die at some point, or, as has been proven beyond a doubt, they're much, much more susceptible to the essentially harmless variants that we're seeing. But they'll be getting boosters for the rest of their lives. I stopped at the second jab, and I hope that the things that I do to keep my immune system strong will keep me from dying from the jab, which I think is going to be a big thing in a couple of years. It already is, you know, up your way. 27 doctors in Canada died with strong clinical evidence that it was just the jab that killed them. And of course, young athletes are dropping dead, and none of my friends want to hear about it. I've got one who says, oh, I just trust the vaccines and the science. But as you know, it's never been about science. But I digress. Anyway, I feel fine, thanks, other than this joke laryngitis.
Rick, thank you so much for being on the show.
I appreciate the chance to connect with your audience, Jim. It's always a pleasure, so thanks for inviting me on.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.